We are back on the Bengals Beat podcast, and I'll tell you right now, there is a lot going on in Cincinnati. Tyler Dragon, Charlie Goldsmith, how you guys doing?
Doing good. It's been a busy day for April 8th. The Bengals announced, officially announced the Ring of Honor, and, you know, Elizabeth spoke today, Elizabeth Blackburn, Anthony Munoz, and they were great with the media, and we have a surprise on this podcast, right, Lindsay?
A surprise. We're going to hear from Elizabeth. She's been doing her rounds, media interviews, and it is going to be a great interview. It'll be on the Bengals Beat podcast extra.
I'm going to start this podcast off on a positive note because Tyler usually, when it's cold out, likes to explain that it's very cold and I'm drinking a hot chocolate. And I would like to point out that it's warm now, and that deserves mention too.
I haven't even complained about the weather in a while. Have you noticed that, Charlotte?
I have.
Okay. Yeah, and then, you know, UCLA made the Final Four. Things are going good. Now all I need is the Lakers to win another championship. And I know you two are happy because the Reds are doing well too. But that is part of my question of the week, so I won't even discuss that right now.
We'll get to that later because there's news in Cincinnati for the Cincinnati Bengals right now. And we've talked about it plenty. It was probably a little over a month ago, maybe 2 months ago now when you think about it when it comes to this offseason. The Bengals were more than likely going to do a Ring of Honor. It was a leak on one of their images, and it's happening. They made it official. It's going to be four. Right now, Hall of Famer Anthony Munoz, Paul Brown, and season ticket holders will get a vote on the final two. What do you guys think about that announcement? We knew it was coming. And do you think it should be more than four in the first year?
Well, I'll say this. The Bengals' first season was in 1968. It is 2021. And finally, they have, well, will have a Ring of Honor. It's been a long time coming for Bengals fans. I see it on Twitter all the time. Bengals fans, they've come up to me, why doesn't the team have a Ring of Honor? And now this is something for fans and former players to appreciate and, you know, to just honor, you know, the Bengals history of, you know, they're some great players, great coaches, and, you know, members of the franchise. Anthony Munoz and Paul Brown, as has been well publicized by now, will be the first two members in the Hall of Fame class. There will be four inducted, but those are the first two inaugural members. In my personal opinion, I think the two that will join them will be Ken Anderson and Ken Riley. There are many other names that are deserving, but those two, in my opinion, will join the inaugural class. And, you know, I think it's a great move by the organization. There are many teams across the NFL who have rings of honor, and the Bengals now are joining the party. We all know that the team only has one player in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and that is Anthony Munoz. They have made it known that they are not happy about just having one member in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But, you know, and while you're, you know, mad and upset and disappointed about that, it is important on the other side as an organization to celebrate and recognize your own. And if you don't celebrate and recognize your own, you can't then complain about the nation in the Pro Football Hall of Fame not, you know, celebrating and immortalizing and recognizing your own players. So this is a great step for the Bengals organization in honoring some of their great players. And, you know, I think it's a good move. I don't think anybody would disagree with that.
What was most, I guess, interesting or meaningful from the conversation today was the opportunity to tell the stories of some of the franchise's greats was a significant part of this. And when you think about it, that's what a Ring of Honor or a Hall of Fame is all about. Kind of to go down memory lane, when the images were first revealed of the names at the banner in Paul Brown Stadium, that sparked the first round of conversation. I said the number was 17. Looking back at what NFL teams that have rings of honor, and then how many players per year of existence, that rounded out to 17 players for the Bengals. We're starting with four, but I hope over the next year, 2, 4, 10 years, the Bengals are able to tap into different generations of Bengals history. I'm excited myself to learn more about the Bengals in the late 60s and the early 70s. I'm excited to learn even more on top of what we've seen about the Super Bowl teams, the teams that played in the Super Bowl. I think it's important to note. Sorry, I just misspoke there. They weren't Super Bowl winning teams. They were Super Bowl playing teams. And then, of course, the most underrated, I think, still era in Bengals history, that mid-2000 stretch where Chad Johnson and Carson Palmer and Willie Anderson and company turned around the franchise in a really significant way. So I hope every era gets its due. I also hope the early 2010s era gets its due once Andy Dalton and AJ Green and Geno Atkins retire, maybe even Kevin Huber adding to the list, Marvin Lewis. There are a lot of names that have made a really big difference in the Cincinnati Bengals organization. Even though the franchise hasn't won a Super Bowl, it has a really meaningful and important history. And personally, as someone who covers the Bengals, I just really look forward to learning more about that.
I think one of the biggest things, and when you talk to former players, Willie Anderson, for example, we had Corey Dillon on in 2017 when the Bengals were honoring the 50th anniversary. And everybody knows how Corey Dillon left the Cincinnati Bengals. It definitely wasn't on a high note, and he hadn't really talked to them. And he didn't go back to Paul Brown Stadium until he played for the Patriots back in the early 2000s. And we talked to him about that, of just recognizing players and the Bengals finally doing that. And he said it was great. He saw his former teammates and everything was good with the Cincinnati Bengals. And he felt like it was a fresh start, a new chapter, and kind of just having that relationship as someone, when you look back on, despite the record of the Cincinnati Bengals, was a huge player. And he made the Bengals fun. He had, you know, his record breaking year. And he talked about some of the guys who should be Hall of Famers, for Willie Anderson, for example. And I think when you do a Ring of Honor, it does help with the Pro Football Hall of Fame voting. It helps recognize, like, look, you're recognizing your own guys. Now there's a chance they should be in the Hall of Fame. Not to say that that should be one of the qualifications, but I think that's going to be huge for a guy. It's unfortunate for a guy like Ken Riley, who should be in the Hall of Fame, who I feel like is going to be one of the guys of the four, along with Kenny Anderson, you could say the same, should be in the Hall of Fame. I think that's helping for the future of getting guys in there. And there are a lot of talented players, despite the Bengals records and no Super Bowl wins and lack of playoff wins lately. They have talented players who you can tell a story, like Charlie said, from the 2003 stretch on, when Marvin Lewis was first here, Andy Dalton winning, going to the playoffs 5 times. Unfortunately, they didn't win any playoff games, but there are just internally a lot of players who aren't going to be recognized. And if you do it internally, they're going to see it externally when it comes to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So I think this is definitely a start. And yes, this should have happened a long time ago, but I think now the conversation is, who goes in now? Who's in after the four? I think it's almost easy to pick the two who should go in. And Tyler, I know you mentioned it, Ken Riley, Ken Anderson. Now it's about, if they do it yearly, which Elizabeth Blackburn will have that interview in the back of this podcast, talked about that, to be determined if they do have it annually. How many do you put in the next year? Who goes in? Who's at the list? I think those conversations are going to be fun to have.
Yeah, those conversations are definitely going to happen in the very near future. And I mean, the next name on my list will probably be Willie Anderson, Chad Johnson. I mean, there are a plethora of names I can throw out there. And even, you know, when these players retired, like 10, 15 years from now, you're going to have AJ Green. You're going to have Geno Atkins. What about maybe Andy Dalton? I mean, you're going to have a lot of players who are going to be added to, or at least deserving to be added to the Ring of Honor here shortly. You can even say Carlos Dunlap. So it's going to be exciting for Bengals fans for not only now, but for years to come.
My two sleepers for this year are Chad Johnson and Tim Montgomery. I'll start with Chad. This was a stat I pulled in February. If AJ Green would have had 100 receiving yards a game per game this season, entire season, 17 weeks, he still would have ranked behind Chad Johnson in total yards with the Bengals over the same year stretch. And that's AJ Green, I think, the Bengals Ring of Honor player too. But that is how strong and talented Chad Johnson was for Cincinnati during that decade. On top of that, he had one of the most meaningful and important relationships with the city, creating a brand and an identity for the Bengals that I could see Bengals fans voting him in. And Crumry, I believe, when the images were leaked, or however you want to put it, in what was that, February, I'm pretty sure Crumry was one of the names. He was indispensable, hard-nosed, everything you would want to represent a franchise, you would want representing the Bengals Super Bowl era teams. So those are two players I liked as well, but more on the same page as, I guess, the two I would vote for right now.
Why do you guys think it's happening now?
Well, I will just say what Elizabeth Blackburn said in the interview with everybody, the mass interview that happened this morning. I think the events of, one, the pandemic, two, I would even put in, you know, the social justice movement, that all kind of sparked the conversation to bring people together and bring the Cincinnati community together and bring the fan base, because sports oftentimes unites people. And, you know, you can be Black, white, Asian, whatever, but you can be a Bengals fan. And that often unites people. You can be Republican, Democrat, independent, but be a Bengals fan. And so oftentimes sports has a unique way of uniting people and bringing people together. And Elizabeth spoke to that earlier today. And I do think that kind of motivated not only her, but the Brown and the Blackburn family to, you know, really take a step back and think about, you know, the Bengals have been around. This is going to be their 54th season. And it's past time to celebrate, you know, the franchise. And yes, everybody knows the Bengals haven't had playoff or Super Bowl success, but just because you haven't had playoff and Super Bowl success doesn't make you an unsuccessful franchise. There are many franchises in multiple sports who have never won at the highest level. So that doesn't mean that you can't have a tradition to be celebrated and recognized. And, you know, having members of the past like Paul Brown and Anthony Munoz, that helps bring people together as a fan base to be able to see a name like those two and say, hey, you know, if a fan were like 60 or 70, I remember when Paul Brown used to own and coach the team. Or I remember when, you know, maybe a fan in their 40s and 50s, I remember when Anthony Munoz was drafted and played for the Bengals. So that just makes you, you know, reminisce and brings up, you know, fond memories of an organization. And that also helps bring people together and have just a good time and a happy time. And quite frankly, we all need that after a year like 2020, when we were in a pandemic, over 500,000 people have lost their lives. And, you know, during a social justice movement and a contentious election. So there are so many different factors that Elizabeth touched on today, but I think all those helped, you know, push it over the edge to finally have a Ring of Honor. I know I went long, and but that is why I think that 2021, in their opinion, was the perfect time after a year that we all experienced in 2020.
So far over the last 12 months, the most obvious change we've seen in terms of a resource for fan engagement has been specifically Twitter and social media. And that's huge. But how many Bengals fans don't have social media? Tons. This is a great tool and a great resource to engage with fans in a different way. Outside of social media, I think there are two main ways to engage with people like this. One is through nostalgia, and the other is through game experience. And this touches on both. On one hand, it'll tie the legends of the organization back to the modern day. And two, it'll create these great moments where players like Anthony Munoz are recognized this season at Paul Brown Stadium in a way that, you know, will create a better game experience when players are getting recognized in that fashion. So it accomplishes both of those things and helps improve just life and satisfaction with the Bengals from a Bengals fan experience.
Yeah, I think when you look at the fan experience and what they're changing with season ticket holders and just people attending Paul Brown Stadium, we've all been to Paul Brown Stadium, not even looking at last season when it was limited fans, and you don't really get that. What an exciting place to be for a football game. You can go to other stadiums and you'll get that atmosphere right away, and they'll be sold out games. That doesn't happen at Paul Brown Stadium. And look, they're not winning games, so that's a factor too. But when you can engage with fans, and I think about it fast forwarding to 2021, and Roger Goodell mentioned it recently that he would like full stadiums, and say the Bengals are off to an okay start and fans are coming to games. Joe Burrow is back from his rehab. And you have that day where you reveal the Ring of Honor, and that would change a stadium for something that should have happened a long time ago. I think it's a start. And I think that's what the Bengals are focusing on, and credit to Elizabeth Blackburn, because I think she is a big reason why we're seeing a lot of these changes, because they're listening. They're listening to fans right now. And you can even see that with the new jerseys that are going to be coming out.
Will say this, it's always better to be late than never.
I like that. I like that. I'm going to tell my friends that next time I'm late to something. Better to be late than never. But when you look at the Bengals right now, we said it's been a busy week. This actually wasn't super surprising to me. I think it wasn't surprising the day that they extended Joe Mixon. The Bengals announced earlier this week that they released Giovanni Bernard. Reports are that he asked for the release. I know earlier national reports are that the Bengals were seeking a trade. I don't know if that was true or they were just trying to put that out there at the time. But they released Gio Bernard. And I think the writing was on the wall. You pay Joe Mixon what you were paying him last season, and you move on from Gio. And it's unfortunate because he has been a great running back player on and off the field, a leader who had to step up last season when Joe Mixon went down. And I know a lot of people will be like, oh, who's going to be out there if Joe gets hurt again? Or what are you going to do when it comes to blocking? Gio's this, Gio's that. You really can't think that way. And I don't think it was a move the Bengals were being cheap at all. I think they're just saving money when they have two other running backs who can rotate in there, and they're fine in the running back room. They've got 8 years out of Gio Bernard, and grateful for them, I'm sure. But they, at the same time, I thought it was the right move to make. It's unfortunate, obviously, they couldn't find a trade partner. But one of the things I think the Bengals have made a mistake on is when you look at some of the older guys, Geno Atkins, Carlos Dunlap, AJ Green, Andy Dalton, is they never moved on from them when they were still pretty legit good. They would just, let's play out their contract. Let's see what happens. And then, unfortunate injuries, and they just never were the former athlete they once were. Of course, they're getting older. And I think that's unfortunate because it's the same thing kind of with Gio. Not to say that he's not going to land on another team, but the Bengals have moved on. They moved on from a lot of players over the last year. And I think that's different, because they normally don't do that. They hang on to guys. They find a way to do another year contract. They are just showing that they're ready to move on to a younger group. And a lot of people could point to that as a rebuild, but were you surprised with the Gio Bernard release?
I wasn't surprised. The Bengals did ask for him to take a pay cut. And then after he kind of balked at that, rumors started to swirl that he was available via trade. And when those rumors started to happen, it became inevitable that his time with the Bengals was running out. And when that happened, the Bengals lost some leverage in trying to trade him. So that's why the release happen this week, and they're going to have a cap savings of a little bit over $4 million. I believe it's $4.1 million. I'm hearing multiple teams are interested in his services. He's still a productive change of pace, third down back. To answer your question, though, I was not surprised by the move. The Bengals, they gave Samaje Perine an extension. So that was kind of a preemptive move. And then, you know, his release is also showing a sign that the team is putting faith in Joe Mixon, and they believe that Mixon is going to be 100% healthy. Zach Taylor has said that this offseason. And, you know, Mixon is going to be very involved in the game plan in 2021. He is healthy. He only played, we all know, 6 games last season. And I know that he is motivated to have a big 2021. And hopefully for his sake and for the Bengals' sake, an injury-free 21. And then, Lindsay, you had mentioned the running back room. You know, the Bengals also, you know, like Jaquez Patrick, who was a practice squad player, and Travion Williams, who is still on the team. But it's no doubt about it, Joe Mixon is RB1, and he is going to get a lion's share of the carries and the passing opportunities in the backfield. So if you're a fantasy owner, I would draft Joe Mixon relatively early in the draft, because the Bengals have him in their game plan a lot this upcoming season. They expect him to have a big year, and Joe Mixon also expects to have a big year.
You know, the timing and the reasoning for this move actually was pretty shocking for me, considering the Bengals already entered the week with the 6th most cap space in the NFL and had already made their, I guess, cap casualty moves, if you want to call it that, with Bobby Hart and Geno Atkins. They accomplished that in March. Doing that with those two players in March allowed them to be as aggressive as they were in free agency. But now with Giovanni Bernard, it's still unclear where those resources can go. Obviously, Hubbard and Bates extensions are one possibility, but they realistically could have already accomplished that. Now, accomplishing that with their most desired structure is the kind of cap math that I'm not as familiar with, but I do question getting rid of a productive player just for the structure of an extension, not necessarily the possibility of that extension itself. The one under-discussed theme of the Bengals offseason, now obviously in 3 weeks from now this could really, really change, but one of the most under-discussed themes of the offseason is the Bengals have taken away weapons from Joe Burrow instead of adding to them. Now, they could go out and on April 27th or whenever the draft is, take Ja'Marr Chase, take a 4th round wide receiver, and make this a freezing cold take. But at this point, AJ Green, who was their number 3 receiver last year, but still a starter, has walked. John Ross, who was on the team, has walked, and they have not added a player since then. John Ross started 2 games. And on top of that, now Giovanni Bernard, who I think was the most valuable of the 3 players I just mentioned, specifically with his ability to pass catcher, but as a pass blocker specifically. Now, the role matched with the price, you can make that argument, and that's why you guys weren't shocked by the move. But doing that when you're already at a point in the offseason where it's not something that you necessarily need to do right now to go out and make an aggressive move, releasing Giovanni Bernard hurts the offense in the short term. The Bengals could go out in the long term and address all of these things, but that's why I'm still confused by the move.
So we're going to talk about this later in the podcast, but I will say this, the Bengals are telling on themselves with their move, with their draft pick.
Hey, I was just going to connect that right now, because Charlie, you know what? That was just the perfect segue right now, because, you know, last week we talked about this. It's over on social media. You got the team sold, the team chase, what the Cincinnati Bengals are going to do. Duke Tobin talked to Dan Hoard over on the Bengals Booth podcast, a really good interview. And it just really shows that this team, they're going to go Ja'Marr Chase at 5. That's what it looks like right now. I know a lot of people are saying it could be Kyle Pitts. They're not getting Kyle Pitts. it's going to be Ja'Marr Chase or Penei Sewell. And I really feel like they are telling on themselves what Tyler said with the Geo release. And I get why they did it. And then I don't get, because he is a productive back. And I think that there's still some health concerns with Joe Mixon staying fully healthy for a season, but a team can't have that mindset. If he's doing well and he's ready to start the season, you got to think he's our running back. He's the reason we paid him. But now I think all signs are just pointing. The Bengals are going offensive weapon, first round, offensive line in the second round, and then third to be determined.
Okay. So the last, what, month, 2 months, I have said that the Bengals should draft Oregon tackle Penei Sewell if he's available. Probably even more than 2 months. I've said that. I've had that in multiple mock drafts that have been published on Cincinnati.com and an Inquirer. And I will say, I still firmly believe that the Bengals should draft Penei Sewell at number 5 if he's available. Most players that I've talked to, past players, not current players, but past players that I've talked to, believe that Sewell is the correct pick for the Bengals. And Anthony Munoz even said that today. Now, of course, he played offensive tackle. Offensive linemen stick together at all times. They favor offensive linemen. They want, you know, another, you know, big guy to get drafted and get some love and get payday. So I understand all that. But Anthony Munoz knows what he's talking about, too. He's a Hall of Famer for a reason. So I still haven't wavered on my stance. I do believe the Bengals should draft Penei Sewell. However, with that being said, I do think, based on what I've been hearing and smoke signals coming out of Paul Brown Stadium in the Bengals facility, is I do think the Bengals are leaning toward drafting LSU wide receiver Ja'Marr Chase. The Bengals have said publicly that this year's draft class is deep at offensive line. And I know they think that they can address the offensive line in the second or the third round and still get a starting caliber player. Do I agree? No. But I'm just saying what I am hearing, and based on the smoke signals I'm getting out of Paul Brown Stadium and that and the organization, is I now am changing. I won't say that because I want y'all to read my mock draft, but I now think that the Bengals are going to go with Ja'Marr Chase at number 5, but I don't agree. I'll say that one more time.
So here's kind of the choice that they made, and this is where Giovanni Bernard gets interesting in this. Theoretically, let's just play a game for a second. The Bengals saved, what, about $4 million by cutting Giovanni Bernard. Three free agent wide receivers who signed for pretty close to that are John Brown, Emmanuel Sanders, Keelan Cole. The Bengals theoretically could have done the Giovanni Bernard move earlier in free agency. Of course, one of those players would have wanted to sign that deal in Cincinnati. The Legos would have had to fit together, the puzzle pieces. But if something like that could have happened, then the Bengals could have signed a solid number 3 wide receiver for the money, with the money they're saving with Giovanni Bernard, and then use, say, their second round pick to get a pretty good number 4 and Mike with Mike Thomas number 5. That's a solid wide receiver group. That also allows you to go and make your offensive line much, much more of a strength with Penei Sewell at 5. This timing and this combination with the smoke signals leading to Chase, as you were saying, leads me to believe that this is a part of an offseason plan. And, you know, I do give them credit for that, for credit for going into the offseason with the idea of Chase and letting that impact the Reef signings and the Bernard move and the, I guess if you want to call it, lack of other additions on offense, specifically at wide receiver and tight end, because you know you're going to get a future number 1 wide receiver in Ja'Marr Chase. That is a plan. And the Bengals do deserve credit for that. I would have personally put more emphasis in improving the offensive line, but the Bengals did improve that while also planning, it seems, to address the area they didn't, pass catcher, in the draft.
I don't remember a draft like this for the Cincinnati Bengals, because obviously all of everybody talked about last year was they were going to get Joe Burrow at number one. Everybody knew that. It wasn't breaking news ever since the end of the season. Honestly, you can go back to that Miami game. But with this one, it's just, you know, it's going to be offense. We know it's going to be offense, but it's offensive line or playmaker. And when Charlie, I mean, you brought it up over 2 months ago when you named the wide receivers who were in the room at the moment when AJ Green's not on the roster. And yeah, John Ross was on the team, as you mentioned, they needed another guy. And it's not about number one receiver, but they need another starter out there in the room, but also still need protection when it comes to Joe Burrow. So the Bengals are going to go wide receiver, offensive line, but right now I feel like they're leaning towards wide receiver.
And what's interesting too is that they probably in the draft still might need a second wide receiver, but all right, let's budget them for one wide receiver, probably two offensive linemen, one running back, you could argue one tight end. That's five of the seven picks. Are the Bengals going to use five, six, seven picks on offensive players this year with what they did in free agency focusing on defense? You could argue that's an equivalent investment in offense. But now I'm very interested to see how that balance continues.
I do think they'll probably address and add to the defensive line in the draft. I'm not going to give up my mock draft, though. it's going to be interesting. Like you both have alluded to, it's fascinating because last year I was hearing that the Bengals were going to draft Joe Burrow in November, December. This year, it's been vastly different, of course, because they don't have the number one overall pick and you don't know what the teams are going to do ahead of you, except now we know that there'll probably be three quarterbacks selected consecutively. Atlanta's still interesting at four, and I'm hearing that they're taking calls to trade the pick. But if they don't, I think the draft right there starts at number four, and the Bengals have the pick right after that. And right now, from what I have been hearing, I think it's going to be a Ja'Marr Chase. There's still some time for them to change their mind. If I were the GM, I can't say it enough. I think the offensive line is a bigger issue than receiver, but hey, the Bengals don't listen to me because, you know, they never do in the three keys. They would have more than six wins if they listened to my three keys and followed them to a T. So they've been known not to listen to me.
I want to say this, and there were reports a couple weeks ago that Joe Burrow, you know, of course, would like a reunion with his former wide receiver. I'll say we've talked to Joe Burrow plenty of times. Joe Burrow is going to be happy either way. If he's getting a piece on the offensive line and so or getting Ja'Marr Chase a reunion in the wide receiver room, he's going to be happy. He's going to be fine. I don't feel like Joe Burrow's in there saying, yeah, this is the one you got to get. I don't think that's a huge factor, but obviously he wouldn't mind having his former wide receiver back.
And Lindsay wants them to draft Ja'Marr Chase.
I don't want them to do, they can do whatever they want. I'm just leaning towards, I think they should go. And the only reason I say this, and I've said it on Twitter probably 5 billion times and even on this podcast, the reason I think they should go Ja'Marr Chase is because I still feel like the depth of starters in the second round for offensive line and maybe even third round, you could get back-to-back offensive line second and third, is still strong where you can get a day one starter. I don't feel the same about the wide receiver room. I don't think you can say that. And then if you look even further, which I don't even want to think about the 2022 mock drafts, the wide receiver class in college, I don't feel like you can compare it to what you can get out of Ja'Marr Chase right now at number five. So I think it's more of thinking towards the future, and you can still address your offensive line because I think that room is stronger than the wide receiver room.
Let me ask you two this. If the Bengals did select Ja'Marr Chase at number five and then selected an offensive lineman in the second round and third round, and obviously they're not going to get the best the top tier offensive line, but still maybe a pretty good offensive lineman. Do you think whoever the Bengals get in the second or third round that they will have an above average offensive line if everyone is healthy entering 2021? I say they'll be average at best.
I say yes. And Joe Burrow, one of the things he's done, I mean, obviously I don't want to look at last season. He was injured and everybody can go back to the Washington game and why it happened. I think you replace three of those guys on your offensive line and you put Quentin Spain in the spot he's comfortable with over at left guard. Yeah, this offensive line is above average and that's what you need. And you can even point to things that Joe Burrow did last year. We talked to him that he's like, hey man, I was holding on to the ball too long, and things that he addressed from his rookie year. Not to say that any of that was his fault, but I think this line, you address two offensive line, even if you get one, in the second round, he could be a starter out there. You move him to guard for now. You get Riley Reiff out there. You have Jonah Williams, who's coming back from his injury. Rehab's going well in California, to be determined on who's starting at center for game one. But I think you could point to that offensive line and say it will be above average. Yes.
Here's where I'm at, and I'll kind of get ahead of something we usually do as well. We usually tease stuff we're working on. I'm working on a kind of a day two draft guide, specifically with offensive linemen and wide receivers that the Bengals could take on day two, because those are two realistic paths worth exploring when analyzing the fifth pick. So I've gotten pretty familiar with the group of tackles who the Bengals could take in the second round. And where I'm at is, while I'm extremely impressed with the group, and it is as good as we're giving it credit for being, I don't think that any one of those guys comes in and is a day one starter out of position at guard over Quentin Spain. So the Bengals could draft, I think, or theoretically draft an offensive lineman in the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh round. And there's still no guarantee that someone who even is starting on week one. Depth is critical. Depth is crucial. That's why drafting multiple offensive linemen makes a ton of sense. But looking at specifically a tackle in the second round and saying that's something that leaps the Bengals offensive line into another tier in the future can certainly do that with the right development. But from week one, I'm not there yet.
And I don't feel like we're giving Frank Pollock enough credit, because they do have a new voice in the offensive line room. So I do feel like, obviously he's not out there playing, but I do feel like that's a difference maker versus Jim Turner.
Yeah. I mean, he is a difference maker, but I like, Charlie and I are in the same, we're in alignment. I don't think day two of the draft and day three, I don't think there are starting caliber offensive linemen there. But I could be wrong. They can prove me wrong.
Well, no, there are starting offensive linemen, caliber offensive linemen there right now, but it would be someone who would come in as your fourth, fifth starter or developmental piece. And also, because of the structure of the Bengals offensive line right now, you would be asking them to play out of position at guard from the jump, where, you know, Quentin Spain and Xavier Suofilo are a different conversation, but those are guys who started for the Bengals last season. And asking a rookie to switch positions and jump them is a very, very difficult thing to do. Maybe someone can do it. Maybe the perfect prospect can. It's a possibility, but it's not something I would necessarily be counting on week one.
Whoever drafts Penei Sewell and Rashawn Slater are going to be very happy. I will say that.
And that's exactly the point. Those are real difference makers.
Mm-hmm. And you know, we'll hear about this for plenty of years to come, that number five pick. If they go wide receiver, if they go offensive line, I think the fan base right now, when you talk to them and you see what they're putting out there, a lot of them are like, offensive line, obviously you look at Joe Burrow, but the Bengals are getting a star at five. It's just to be determined on if they want to address the offensive line with five or they want to go to the second, third round. All right, let's get to it, because you know what? We went a little long today. We had to throw in that NFL draft talk because the draft is 3 weeks from today and we'll have plenty of content coming to Cincinnati.com. We'll get to that in just a moment. Tyler, what are your questions?
Well, the first one is kind of the theme of the day, and the second one is the Cincinnati Reds question. So we'll get to the theme of the day question first. I want you two to name four players on the Bengals roster right now who have the best chance of getting in the Ring of Honor.
Go first, Charlie.
Tyler, I really mean this. This is your best question of the day yet. This is a really fantastic question. So two are easy. Burrow and Bates are the easy ones. Players who I would project to be at a Pro Bowl or borderline All-Pro level on their current or in the, on their current contracts in the immediate future. Next, I'm going to go with the real wild card. I think Kevin Huber, the longevity, setting the game's record is something that is really going to deserve a long look. Now, as for a fourth, it gets really tricky. I mean, I think Dan Horton and Dave Lapham would be a very good argument. I think those are quality Ring of Honor names as well, but obviously they're not players. But if we're counting people in the Bengals organization, let's give a shout out to the broadcast booth. Oh, this is obvious, and it's not someone in the organization either, but Mike Brown. I think that is a very obvious future Ring of Honor participant.
This is a really hard question, and and I wasn't ready for it because I thought you were going to be like, oh, you know, who are going to be here for in the Ring of Honor going into 2021? Who are the final two? And obviously, I feel like it's really simple, and it's going to be obvious who the final two are. But when it comes to the current roster right now, and I – of course, you got to go with the fan favorite and what he's going to be able to do when he's healthy and he gets a full season and quarterback Joe Burrow. I hate copying what Charlie said, but Kevin Huber was the first one that came into my mind just for how long he's been with the Cincinnati Bengals. And I don't see his time coming to an end anytime soon. So I think you just have to put him in there. This is not because of their resume. This is not because of their resume. It's because of what I think maybe they can do. I'd put T. Higgins in. I know that's crazy. He's had one rookie year. He's had one rookie year, and it's like, who do you think you are, naming T. Higgins already to put him in the Ring of Honor that just was created today? I think that this guy can be special. And the reason I think he can be special is T. Higgins and Joe Burrow remind me of Carson Palmer and Chad Johnson, not because of their numbers, but because of the chemistry. Because I think you look back on what T. Higgins was able to do in his first year, what could have been if Joe Burrow would have stayed healthy. I think he's special. And he didn't even play all games for T. Higgins. So I think that I'd put him in. But my fourth, I don't know right now.
Now you got to say four.
I know I got to say four. I'm trying to go on the defensive side of the ball. And I think it would have been easy if, like, Geno Atkins was still on the roster, but he's not. So, I mean, yeah, you can point to Jesse Bates. Obviously, he's the great special safety. This is hard, and I'm not going to stop thinking about it.
Ryan Kiggins is a great choice because it's like you never know what's behind door number three. Just he has more room to grow, and he showed signs and potential for growth that if you're projecting who can be for a Ring of Honor, I guess you'd need to be kind of either a borderline Hall of Fame or even a tier below that, and that's still an extremely special player. You know, you need room to grow there almost.
And, Tyler – I want to put a defensive guy in, and it's just, it's tough. I think one thing you can look at with the Cincinnati Bengals team, this roster in 2021, and then obviously a draft to be determined, because not even looking at Joe Burrow in last year's draft, I think the Bengals had a good draft. I really do. I mean, the linebackers are to be determined, but I think they take a leap in year two when it comes to the rookies. I just can't decide on the defensive side. I know I could say Jesse Bates. I know I can. He's probably going to be one of the best. He is one of the best to play the game right now. I just want to see two more years, see what happens. Can I answer this in like 2 years?
You never answer the questions fully. I will say this.
It is a great question.
I will say this, and I'll be quick. My four, and I'm going off of resume and also what I envision for the future. They are Joe Burrow, Jesse Bates. He definitely needs to sign a contract extension. Joe Mixon and Kevin Huber. Those would be my four. Off the field, I would say Mike Brown and Katie Blackburn off the field. So that is the first question. The second question, I know you two will like to. It's based on the Reds. Their first in the division right now, which I just found out not too long ago. You two make sure that I keep up with all Reds news. Has the start of the Reds season changed your outlook about the team? And do you perhaps have a new prediction?
How much time do you have?
Really go first.
The next time Bobby Nightingale and I sit down to record a Reds Beat podcast, this will be the entire podcast. So I'll tease that.
How come I'm not a guest on the podcast? I have so much Reds stuff to talk about. I can't believe it.
They're a good team. And that's the short answer. The short answer is they're a good team and that Jonathan India is a very good rookie. And those are two things I wasn't saying this time last week. So that's improvement.
Do you have them as your division winner now?
I don't. I predicted 81-81 heading into the season. And again, I said, no, I think they're a good team. Or 81-81, I thought they would be a solid team. They're better than I thought. The division is off to a weak start offensively. It's just too soon. I mean, I would still predict the Reds. No, you never want to overreact. I would still predict the Reds to go 500 the rest of the way just to, you know, because when you make a prediction, you don't want a 1 week to change that. I think that's never smart in a sport like baseball. I do think they're a better team than they were, I thought, a week ago. So I guess I'd be predicting them to go 4 games over .500 now to finish the season. But their upside is much, much higher than I expected.
I think I want to see them on the road, getting out of Great American Ballpark. And everybody will always say Great American Ballpark. It's really easy to hit the ball, hit homers, hit it out, smaller ballpark. I think this team is good. I don't think that it's just a long season. Baseball is a long season. We're just in April. We're only 1 week into the season. But what I like about them, and I know Charlie just mentioned Jonathan India, and he was going to be someone that a lot of people paid attention to prior to the season. And he really looks comfortable out there. But I think it's different players, different guys stepping up each night. And the chemistry, I feel like, is a crazy drug. And I really feel like they're having fun out there. And I think you can have fun, and that can really help you become a good team. I know that sounds silly, but I think a lot of guys out there are just having a good time. And I think this is going to be a fun team to watch. I just don't know how long it will last into the season.
Are they going to win the division, Lindsay?
No, I don't. I think the Cubs will end up winning. Cubs, I mean, they always just kind of find a way. I know the Cards are there too. No, they won't win the division. I don't see them winning it. They won't be in last. I'll say that. They won't be in last. That'll be for the Pirates.
Well, the Bengals finished last in the 2021 season. I'm asking three now.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, here's the thing. The Cleveland Browns are like my biggest question mark because they're good. They're young. They're talented. You know, they could have done more damage in the postseason, but I just don't believe in Baker Mayfield. So I think I would put, I don't know.
You have to, Liz, you have to answer this question.
Okay, I'm going to. I'm answering it. I'm going to answer it. I think the Bengals will be last in their division. The only reason I say this is because their division's good. That's all I can say. I think you're still going to get production out of Cleveland. I'm still not buying the Baltimore Ravens. And no, I'm going to put them in third.
Third.
Don't make it.
I have to wait and see to actually see who's on the Steelers once all the dust settles. Because there's just been too many changes with them.
Yeah. That's when I started to rank them, I was like, hold on, Pittsburgh. I might put Pittsburgh at the bottom. So I'll put the Cincinnati Bengals in third in their division.
Okay. Charlie.
Again, I need to refresh myself on the updated Steelers depth chart post draft before I get there.
Okay. Well, the last time the Bengals finished third in division was the 2017 season. They've been last ever since. So it should be interesting. We'll see.
Fun fact, Ken Zampezi was the offensive coordinator to start that season. So that really definitely didn't go that season didn't start out that great.
Yeah. Well, Lindsay has the Bengals third. Charlie's still undecided. I won't give my answer because nobody cares.
No, you have to.
I was just trying to get out of it.
No. Give it.
I think the Bengals are still at least a year away from seriously contending. I do think they'll be a better team. They'll be a more exciting team for the fan base. They'll be a more competitive team. But I do believe the Browns and the Ravens are playoff contenders. And those teams, they have Super Bowl aspirations. I don't think they're going to make the Super Bowl. But within the organization, I think that those players believe that they have the talent to reach a Super Bowl. Not saying that they will. As for the Steelers, I think that Mike Tomlin and Big Ben believe that their window is still slightly cracked. And they have one more good run left in them. So I think the Steelers are going to be a little bit better than teams think. They're not going to start off like world beaters and, you know, by far away be, you know, 11-1 or whatever their record was. But I do think that they are going to be a competitive team as well. And, you know, I keep it honest. And the Bengals are still a rebuilding team. They're young and they have some promising pieces. And we have talked about them a lot on this podcast. But I still think that they're still maybe a year out from seriously being a playoff contender.
All right, one question to wrap this up. Normally, I don't ask one, but I actually want to tie into the Giovanni Bernard release and the money that the Bengals have. They don't want to be in the position that they were in last year or this past offseason with Carl Lawson. Do you think they take some of that money and they extend Jesse Bates before the season starts?
The Bengals have a history of giving players extensions right before the regular season. Tyler Boyd, Joe Mixon, those are the two latest examples. I do know that they want to extend Jesse Bates and Sam Hubbard. Those are two players that, you know, they are very interested in extending. I can say I know for sure that Jesse Bates does want an extension, and he did notice that Broncos safety Justin Simmons signed a 4-year $61 million extension to stay in Denver. Bates believes he deserves something in that ballpark. I know that for a fact.
I'll kind of tie back to Lindsay's question, because the only thing that matters right now, I think, is whether the role Giovanni Bernard's cap savings, if you want to put it in cold terms like that, have an impact on it. From what I understand, using resources like Over the Cap, the Bengals could have extended Jesse Bates in a reasonable way without releasing Giovanni Bernard, but there could be structural advantages toward that contract extension with Jesse Bates that not having Giovanni Bernard selling on the books could help. So the short answer for me is I don't know, just because it's up to how the Bengals want to negotiate that extension. And that's just not something I don't have those numbers in front of me. So the purpose, so again, that leaves the purpose of the Giovanni Bernard release a little bit of a question for me, but there could be a reason for it. We just don't know it yet.
Plenty on Cincinnati.com. The draft is 3 weeks from today. Charlie, Tyler, what is up there right now?
Well, I have not one, but two stories on the Bengals forming a ring of honor this coming season. So check that out. All the latest information and why the team decided to do a ring of honor now. And also, we talked about it just now, the Bengals released longtime running back Giovanni Bernard, so I have the latest on that release as well.
I'm immersed in Reds coverage right now. I don't know if you've heard they're off to a good start, but also I'm speaking to 4, 5, 6 NFL coaches, evaluators, scouts a day working on the Bengals Day 2 draft guide, like I mentioned, because they'll do whatever they do at 5, but Day 2 is almost just as impactful with the amount of needs the Bengals have, so I'm diving deep into those prospects.
And next, we tease it already in the Bengals Beat podcast. We'll hear from Elizabeth Blackburn about the new stripes and what else is going on over at the Bengals. Thank you for listening to the Bengals Beat Podcast. We're back on the Bengals Beat Podcast, and we have a very special guest, Director of Strategy and Engagement for the Bengals, Elizabeth Blackburn. Elizabeth, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you guys for having me on.
We're excited to have you. And one of the things I know that you have been out and about with some of your media interviews, and I find fascinating, is your journey to get to work back with your family, work at the Bengals. Can you talk about just the journey over the last couple of years of getting to where you are now?
Yeah, definitely. Without sounding maybe overly calculated, I've always wanted to come and do this and work for the team and live in Cincinnati. And after I graduated Dartmouth College, I wanted to get, you know, I wanted to learn and I wanted to get good experience that would make me coming back valuable to the organization and to the community. So after college, I went out and worked for a management consulting company called Bain & Company. They're an amazing company, great company to work for, taught me a ton of tools. They literally call it the Bain toolkit, and they help with, you know, the business thinking, structuring your thoughts, prioritization. Everything is results driven and data driven. So that has been fundamental for me and something I carried back with the team. While I was at Bain, they have a 6-month internship opportunity. You can set it up for yourself and go work anywhere you'd like. So I went and worked at the NFL league office in New York City for 6 months and split my time across two departments, the management council and the league's strategy department, which was a great way to understand the CBA. Literally, I reconciled the salary cap on a daily basis with a couple of others. And in terms of the strategy department, get an understanding of where the league is headed long term and at the macro level. Like, we're one of 32. And it was a great way to get to network with folks at the league and see kind of the bigger picture. And then from there, I went and worked in private equity at a company called KKR in New York City, and served as sort of an operations executive for their portfolio companies, and gave me exposure, you know, working hand in hand with CEOs to optimize companies, optimize the bottom line. It was in healthcare, but whether it was utilities at Bain or healthcare with KKR, I just always found myself tying everything back to football and analogizing, like, you know, oh, well, I loved working in utilities because they had a unionized workforce and the NFL has a unionized players union. So just all of these analogies and constantly finding myself thinking about football at night when I was should have gone to sleep for work the next day. And then last year it was just, you know, good timing. And I really do believe we're on the cusp of a really exciting new chapter here in Cincinnati and with the Bengals. And I wanted to be a part of that. So hopefully that wasn't too long, but that's sort of my path and what I bring to the table. And I hope that, you know, I'm adding value every day.
Did you always want to come back and work for the Bengals?
Yes. Since I was very little, it was like, I went back and forth just because everyone sort of assumed that I would, and I never wanted to do that. Like, I wanted to earn it and prove it. And so I did what I could to try and be worthy. But no, since I was little, like, I've always just dreamed of working for the team and winning Super Bowls, like literally since I was 2. And even when I was in college, like, I double majored in economics and engineering, and both of my college major capstone projects were about football and the Bengals and ticket sales and the fan experience. So it's just, I love it. I love it. And I'm very thankful and fortunate that I get to work here and be doing a job that I just could not be more passionate about.
I think you look around the league right now. I mean, you see it internally. There are plenty of women who work in the front office just with the Bengals alone. What's it like seeing women in the NFL right now?
It's awesome. It's awesome and it's exciting. And, you know, I just think for any profession, if you're passionate about it, you can do it. And I hope that the Cincinnati Bengals, you know, we're an organization that opens our arms and we just want talent and we want passionate individuals. And we're lucky to have some phenomenal female executives here at the club.
I think you look over at social media right now over the last couple of years, and yeah, there's a Joe Burrow effect and the fans are really excited about the Cincinnati Bengals. Why has engagement become such a priority over the last 2 years? And I know I've heard you say it's not number one, because a lot of people will point to, of course, winning is, but what are you putting into the engagement? And you can see some of the changes.
I think engagement is so important because it's what differentiates sports, and it engagement is at the heart of fandom. And, you know, we've sort of seen it and felt it. And the more we can tap into and allow our fans to just grow their passion and love for the team, I want to make that as easy and fun as possible.
Your grandpa is Mike Brown. Everybody does know that. What's one thing about him that Bengal fans don't know that they should know?
That he is the most kind, generous individual.
That's number one for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I could give you a whole podcast about how much I love my grandpa and how misunderstood he is. He's, for anyone who's gotten to know him one-on-one, he is a genuinely good person, and he really cares. He cares about our employees so much. He cares about the players, and he cares about Cincinnati so much. He's just so humble. He doesn't want anybody to know.
No, I love that. And the Ring of Honor, the big announcement today, as you mentioned earlier, it's an exciting day for Cincinnati. A lot of Bengals fans wanted this. And you talked about that. And when you joined the Bengals front office, how important it was to kind of bring that to life. What was that like when that became official, that the Ring of Honor was officially happening at Paul Brown Stadium?
It was very exciting. Like, even internally, there was a lot of work and thought that went into building a process that engaged the season ticket members, would create a lot of content to engage our fans, and ultimately create a ring and a celebration that was worthy of the inductees, and engaging and celebrating our legendary players and coaches who've been and made the Cincinnati Bengals such a fantastic organization with a rich history since we were founded.
We appreciate you joining us. I have a few questions for you too, Elizabeth. And I can say about your grandpa, he's also a history buff. My first year here, we had so many conversations at Bengals practices about just history of football, and civil rights history, America, like so many different history conversations.
He is the most well-read human being I know. It's remarkable. Yeah. Also, don't get him started on trees and birds. Mm-hmm. Very knowledgeable.
Yeah. Yeah. We wouldn't even talk about football half the time. It was just history lessons and everything. I wanted to get back to, the fan engagement and things. You know, ever since the Bengals hired you as their director of strategy and engagement, you've been very progressive and innovative. You seem to have tapped in to the pulse of the fan base very well. Why do you think that is?
Thank you. That's a huge compliment for me. It means a lot.
Appreciate that.
I think it's a little bit of, you know, good fortune and following the right people and on Twitter. and I think I'm also, growing up a Bengals fan during the 90s and early 2000s, it made my skin very tough. And I've heard things personally to my face that, you know, I can hear the feedback, and that's important to know the environment that I'm living in. And then just personally, I really value feedback. I genuinely think that I can do anything, everything better every day. And that's what I strive for. And it's impossible to achieve that or to make yourself better unless you listen.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The Ring of Honor is obviously going to be a reoccurring tradition. I'm assuming it's going to be annual, once a year. Will there be 4 members added each year?
We're not even committing to annual just yet.
Okay.
We really want to see, and to the point of listening and taking feedback, we really want to see how the first year goes before we commit to anything. It will absolutely be recurring, and not every 10 years. I don't want to scare people away with something like that. But we, before we commit to anything, we're going to see how the first year goes and then continue to iterate on it to make it better every year or every recurring frequency, whatever that becomes.
Well, maybe this is a question that's too premature. Will there just be 4 members this year? Has that already been finalized?
There will be 4 this year, yes.
Okay. Who do you think the other 2 members should be, if you're allowed to tell us? Give us your opinion.
I have no idea. I know that there are already a lot of Twitter votes going out today. Mm-hmm. So Twitter polls. So I don't know. I think it's going to be fun to see how the process and how the vote among the suite holders and the season ticket members plays out.
But you're a Bengals fan. I'm sure you have a list of names that you would like to see in the Ring of Honor.
I do, and it's definitely longer than 2, which is why I'm excited for this year, and I'm excited for the first several years, because I think all of those players who are going to come get inducted in general are going to be great. There are several. Like, I would be so thrilled, honestly, with 10 different names.
Mm-hmm. And there's another announcement coming up soon too, the jersey reveal. Can you tell us when we can expect those jerseys to be revealed?
I cannot, but I can encourage you and all of your listeners to stay tuned, because we're really excited about that announcement.
Have you seen the jerseys?
I have seen the jerseys.
Can you give us a little tease?
They look pretty good. They look pretty cool.
Okay. And, you know, as a lifelong Bengals fan and also an employer of the team now, tell fans why they should be excited about the future and the direction of this franchise.
Oh, I have a long list. Starting with, you know, this sort of will come out of our purpose statement, which we worked on last year with as a project that I did. And this actually it expands beyond just right now. But I think right now, why it's so exciting to be a Bengals fan is we're at this intersection of an incredibly authentic, meaningful company that was founded genuinely out of the roots of love of football, combined with this new approach to modernize. And the organization, the heartbeat is so pure, and it just, I hope that it's a brand and a team that people want to, you know, be associated with. And you've got so many talented people inside of this organization who want to do great things for the fans and for the city of Cincinnati. So that's the macro answer. And then combine that with an unbelievably awesome young core of players on the field. I just would be so hard pressed to point to any other team when you think about the talent, the football talent, combined with the personalities that are on our roster. I love them. We have just an amazing team. I hope we're easy to root for. And it's just a really great combination of both, you know, the front office and the team have so much opportunity and bright bright days ahead.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned players, and that kind of plays along my next question. And a couple weeks from now, there'll be an NFL draft in Cleveland, and there's an ongoing debate on who the Bengals should select at number 5. You're tapped into social media. You have a pulse of the fan base. Do you have an opinion on who the team should select that their first pick? And, you know, are you involved in those discussions at all, if I can ask that?
I will not weigh in on that debate. It is too hotly contested right now to weigh in. I'm just going to try to stay neutral with the more broadly loved announcements rather than picking an edge on that one, because shout out to the Civil War. If you guys have watched that like podcast YouTube video of like, it brought back, you know, high school debate club to the forefront. And again, it goes back to the engagement and passion among the Bengals fans and Houdet Nation. Like I love how charged this debate is. And, you know, it's just way too early to know what's going to happen on draft night, but it should be exciting.
When you spoke today, you talked about winning and you talked about engagement as two of the top three goals. How do those two work hand in hand?
Well, if you are winning, then things get a lot easier and there are probably more engaging moments or more positive engagements. But, you know, even just if I think about the team and what can lead to winning is having an engaging and strong culture. And I think something that ultimately translates to engagement and support outside of the building is the engagement inside of the building and the culture that we're building. And you'll hear Zach talk about it. I love talking about culture. I think it's so important. And I think, you know, when you sort of find that rhythm, it can make anything, you know, successful.
What do you like about Bengals fans, and how would you describe where Bengals fans are at right now?
What do I like about Bengals fans? I like the gritty resilience of Bengals fans. I love how, you know, we're tough, but we're loyal. And I think the loyalty value really resonates to the top of our organization. And where do I think Bengals fans are at right now? I personally am sensing optimism and excitement, and I hope that that's where they are, and I hope that that just continues to grow.
And then lastly, looking forward to the season, just from an engagement perspective, from even people who aren't even on social media, what can you do and what do you hope to do between now and then to create, I guess, hype or whatever the word that best suits this question heading into the 2021 season?
So I am extremely excited for our game day show. Like the experience of game day at Paul Brown Stadium, everything that our fans have been seeing on social media, that is going to flow directly into game day. And I hope and have the goal for our organization that we are the best game like live entertainment experience you can go to. And so I hope that people come and check out the new game day experience, because it's going to feel different and it's 100% focused on energy and excitement. And we have a really talented team who has some great ideas that we're excited to unveil and show when we can get back out on the field and get folks back into Paul Brown Stadium.
One last thing I noticed, I believe it was before the Steelers game, you brought back kind of the old graphics for the pregame with the Tigers scratching the flag. I think I have that right. Are there any old things that nostalgic, even that looking back at when you were growing up as a Bengals fan, you really appreciated?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that video, because that original Tigers on the Prowl, we call it, video with the like Tomb Raider feel, I grew up with that, and it literally, to the point where when I saw it before, not that Steelers game, but probably like 2010 or whenever it was retired. It got to the point where I loved it so much that I would like start tearing up before kickoff. And I was like, oh my gosh, I need to settle down. Like, this is too much. But that, and if anyone listening remembers the Bootsy Collins first down, move the chains chant, that was gold. So I'll definitely, our video and content team, they're working on creating, you know, more and new archives, but they're also learning and I'll have to remind them to check out the Bootsy video, but they loved pulling back that old Tigers on the Prowl video. Those are my two favorites.
Elizabeth Blackburn, Director of Strategy and Engagement for the Bengals. We can't thank you enough for joining us over on the Bengals Beat podcast. We know you're busy. You have the jersey reveal coming up, the NFL draft, and plenty of new content coming over on the Bengals app. So we can't thank you enough for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me. Hootay.